demo deconstruction, guys. So the purpose of this session really is we often do these keynote demos, and people always wonder, like, how did you build it? Why did you choose that demo? How did it really work? Was there any smoke and mirrors? Was it real? Were we faking stuff? So basically, Michael and I decided to run this, and we wanted to do two things. One was to step through each of the demos and show you how they're built. We'll break it down, show you what we were running backstage. But we also want to give some kudos to the technical guys backstage who are making sure that for those of us on stage, it's all working. So just by way of introduction, my name is Adam Hall. I sit in the Windows Server and Management marketing team. I look after the Windows Server side of Enterprise Client. So Demo 6 is kind of all of mine. With me is Martin Booth from our team as well. And Martin is the technical guy who did all of my demos, so I thank him for that, and I'll hand over to him to introduce himself.
Yeah, my name's Martin Booth. I'm a technical product manager on the Windows Server marketing team alongside Adam. I look after everything client management, so configuration manager, Windows Intune. And I'll be taking you through what we did behind the scenes for both Demos 5 and Demo 6.
I also work in the Windows Server and Management marketing team. Our focus is on modern data center, so primarily Windows Server and System Center, and Azure and workloads and everything else that starts with a server in it pretty much. Yeah.
Exactly, and I'm Kenan Owens, and I'm a technical product manager on Michael's team as well. And yeah, we're focused on Windows Server, System Center, and how we can really take that and use it all together to show some of these cool things that we're doing on the demo.
Awesome. All right, so
we'll come back.
I can build a keynote demo, but I can't run a clicker. Come. Okay. Can we click to the next slide? Ooh, now it works. Cool. Okay, so we're going to look at demo one. So I'm going to walk through some of the reasons we built it. Some of the reasons we decided that. So effectively, our team between us, we sort of sit down with Brad and his team and listen to the message that he wants to talk about, and then sort of devise how we're going to enhance that message with a great technical spectacular, basically. And we then choose a number of different demonstrations. Some of the demonstrations choose themselves. You know, Store Simple definitely chose itself. It's just great technology, a new acquisition. We really wanted to showcase some of the integration. Some of them are on a path, you know, where we want to show some real enhancements or involvement, evolving of our demonstrations. The SMB demo is a great example of that, you know, where we're seeing more involvement around this software-defined storage components, storage spaces, and utilizing SMB and RDMA and things such as that. And then some of them we just want to showcase and have a lot of fun with, you know, show really where you can push some of the boundaries of this. So around in demo one, we really wanted to focus on a couple of core things. Really, demo one was really just, you know, celebrating the message we put out for MMS last year, giving Vijay the time to really reinvigorate and reinforce that message around IT as a service, around fabric management, and around data center agility. So I'm going to hand it over to Kenan, who's going to talk a little bit more about demo one and what we did.
Great. So first of all, Adam was talking about earlier, this environment that we created, we have back at our Microsoft corporate in our lab. It's made up of a bunch of different servers, and we've made a bunch of different networks to build a robust environment, maybe similar to one that multiple companies would create. But in our environment back at corporate, we have a physical switch. It's a Cisco switch that we have four different VLANs connected to it for the separation of this network. And we have an infrastructure network, that's the 192 network that you see there. We have the bottom two networks, which is where our Hyper-V hosts are, basically New York and New Jersey. It's all connected and routed out through a wireless network, which I can also get to, onto our corporate network out to the internet. Now inside of this environment, we have infrastructure servers running inside that 192 network, plus some of our services that you'll see are loaded in there as well. But then the two 10.0 networks, the 10.10.20 and the two 10.10.20 networks, those are those network virtualization ones that Vijay was talking about New York and New Jersey. And then the 10.10.10 is another physical network that only the orange 10.10.20 can route to. So if we can switch over to the actual demo screen now.
So you can see why we panicked a little when the internet went down. we had backups on site, but they were not as rich as the primary. So we were in definitely in Nokia Lumia stage at that start of the demo.
Exactly. In the backup environment we have back here, we have four Lenovo W530s. Each one of them has 32 gigs of RAM plus SSD hard drives. And also, I brought another one of those same Cisco switches. We're connected to that and the same wireless switch. So it mimics the environment fairly closely, but because I can't have 8-10 servers there, but only however many laptops Alaska let me fly down with at a time, we really are limited by how much we can show if we had to show it on premises. So we're glad we're able to get that internet back up. So in this environment, we do have multiple different tiers. The main focus here was a couple of things. And one is that we have this service template model inside of VMM, which you'll be able to see later on. But the next main focus is that we can create these rich service templates for now Microsoft workloads. So like Brad said, there's that server, that building clouds blog site that our technical enablement team is putting together. And there is where you can download a reference architecture for building a SharePoint farm. So once you import that farm, follow the different steps that they have for putting the pieces of the template in the right location, you can then deploy it out. And where all that stuff comes from is the library inside of VMM. So all of these templates I was able to create on this production environment, then copy over to the backup environment because they're just stored as templates, service templates, as well as configuration items, which are stored down here in our library servers. So if you haven't played with VMM 2012 yet, please do. And if you do, you can see some of the really cool things you can do. Like I can add in a bunch of different what we call configuration resources. And let me get down here to one of those. And these configuration resource files allow me to really build in a robust scripting policy that gives me that ability to deploy these machines and these templates over and over and over again. So demo one, like Michael said, was really celebrating what we can do inside of a private cloud by creating these different service template models, running those Microsoft workloads, and then lastly, being able to move over to Windows Azure. And with Windows Azure, taking that VHD file or that VHDX file and bringing it up to Windows Azure to then be able to deploy that same virtual machine down there. When you put all that stuff together, that gives you that rich capability of now starting to branch out and build this cloud across and outside of your data center.
Absolutely. So I get a question, and it was a really interesting one, that usually when we do these keynote demos, we truck racks and racks of stuff down. I remember for last keynote, we must have had, what, three, four rolling racks?
We had three portable racks. Each one had 5 to 20 servers, depending.
And we bring a lot of servers because we find that forklifts have a good option of going through our racks every now and then and taking a few servers out. And this was the first time we actually decided to do having the infrastructure left back in Redmond, and then
that's
bringing
the primary. Where here's the secondary, the backup is on site.
So it was working. It was beautiful to about
9 o'clock.
9 o'clock. But I think we recovered really well. So let's see if we move back to the slides. Excellent. We talk about demo two, and demo two is about foundation, and this one was really exciting for me. And unfortunately, what our colleague who built this demo, Prabhu, couldn't attend to help us celebrate this because his wife is giving birth to their second child. I think today or tomorrow. it was a shame that he couldn't come down, but he spent a lot of time really devising how this demo would work, and we really wanted to push this into like three main areas. Really, one, to showcase that SMB-based storage access is here and it's now. And you saw that with that great comparison against our SMB-based storage and direct attached storage. And Kenan will walk you through exactly how we did this and the tool that we actually used to do it as well. And I think that's really interesting because it's one of those things when you talk about SMB-based storage, people just naturally think file shares and Word docs. And we're saying, you know what? This is a viable solution for you to run Hyper-V and SQL databases over. So you can really start thinking about that flexibility of your data center, creating tiered storage pools then be able to farm those out at your applications. That whole view of storage fabric is really exciting. And then Store Simple, of course. I mean, what a phenomenal acquisition around tiered storage. And I'm going to be really excited to see how we use this technology now and in the future as well. And Kenan can talk a little bit more about that. And I think the last one, I mean, software-defined networking is just the hot term at this stage. And, you know, we really nail a lot of this out of the park. And some of the things, you know, the demonstrations you showed around not just live migration of virtual machines and keeping the customer addresses, but now being able to mix the physical world and the virtual networking world is just phenomenal stuff. And, you know, they were really exciting demos for us to build. That tool that you saw, I mean, we worked really hard on that customized tool to get the visualization, which is quite fantastic. So let's move you back to the demo and we can walk you through some of bits and pieces.
Okay, no, next slide here.
Oh, next slide, sorry.
So the storage spaces one was built with local hardware on site, and we actually built this one in a separate network than the one in our keynote room, which means we would have had four more servers we would have had to bring down. And this one also had, so the server on your left is the one that we're running upon, and it has 24 disks attached to it, running inside of a JBOD and doing direct attach using storage spaces to create one big line. We put a bunch of disk files on there and we're running the SQL IO test against it. The server on the right is the remote file server that has the remote file share on it, and it also has the exact same makeup, same server model, same everything, same disks on the back end, has a storage space on side of there that it's representing via file share. And then the store symbol was also connected to that network, and then that's connected out to Windows Azure. For the network virtualization demonstration, that same network environment, but like I said, that 10.10.10.10.20 network, both of those our Hyper-V network virtualization using Windows Server 2012. And what we did was we added a physical gateway, basically takes the virtualized network gateway from Hyper-V and converts it into traffic that can go on the 10.10.10 network. Just like what a hoster would do when he's virtualizing an environment and dedicating a piece of that to a specific individual or corporation. So if we flip back to the demo, what we're going to see here is on storage spaces, inside that same JBOD on the local disk, we also added all the stuff that Vijay was using when he created a new, when he was creating the new LUN, I mean the new volume. So just right-click new volume, and inside of Source Simple, you have the ability to create a LUN off of that using the existing disks that he already has available to him inside of that storage pool. The SQL IO test. Basically, what we did was we created this program called SQLIO. It has a bunch of little software around it, a configuration file. It says what we want to test and demo and show and how we want it to portray. What we did inside of that environment is we set it to run for 5 seconds, hitting the file. Depending on how big the file is and how long you have it run will depend on how much you're using in cache or out of cache. We tested short, medium size, long size, and saw that on all three of those disk types of performance, the performance was very equivalent when you talk about direct attached storage and the remote file system, which is all backed up by a 10 gig network. On the network virtualization piece, oh, and then the store simple piece, let me go back to that real quick. So then on the store simple piece, come back here, there it is. Here, one of the cool things we were able to do here under the configurer of volumes, when you're able to create the volume, Vijay got to the point where he created the volume, he extended the disk and created it. Right now it's 1 terabyte. You can take it up. Let's bring it to 4 terabytes. And just like that, we have a larger disk. And in a few seconds, it'll show up inside of the VM. This host is also this disk F right here is connected via iSCSI to the store simple device on that same network. So doing F5 to refresh here, we see the actual disk space available, and we can just right click on here and extend the disk, and at that point take advantage of this extra space that's available. So that's one of the really cool things that we were able to do within Store Simple to quickly utilize that disk. So Vijay showed you how to get it there, but now you can just really utilize it. If we go back to the network virtualization demo inside of here, there are a couple things that we've done. The first one is that we talked about the service providers. With Hyper-V network virtualization, you can add these network virtualization extensions. And by adding those extensions, you can easily add those network virtualization components that our partners are building. And that's all done through the switch extension manager inside of VMM. So you take a switch extension manager and you create, let's say we can create a new one. So add a new virtual switch extension manager. And you can pick of the list that you have which one you want to extend inside of there. You can pull that in. And then after you've created that switch extension manager, you can attach it to the different Hyper-V hosts and it'll deploy to all of them across there at the same time. So that's really nice. Then secondly, the live migration piece, if we go back up here to VMs and services, we can see that, and then go back down to this host right here. Oops, not 7 and 8, it's 4 and 1. So what we can see is that we have these different VMs that are running, and the virtual machines themselves, we created VM networks for each of those virtual machines. So I have both the, on the production network that's able to connect out to the physical world, I have the 10.10.20 network right here, as well as I have a 10.10.20 network up on Fourth Coffee. The Fourth Coffee one is totally isolated inside of Hyper-V. It's just talking internally within the virtual machines. The one on the production network is going through our network gateway and talking out to the real world. And all you have to do is live migrate that virtual machine and you're able to access and watch it migrate over.
Sorry.
Now while it's going over there, what we're going to do, I'll hit migrate over here and I'll flip over to this side of the screen real quick. I think they're saying speed up because we're running out of time for those guys to do their demo.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we'll definitely do that. And over here, what you can see is that this tool is similar to that other tool. It's a tool that we created internally, but that tool allows me to access that network. So my configuration right here, if I do IP config, I'm running on a local machine that's a 10.10.10 network. You can see it right here. But what we're doing is we're accessing this 10.10.20 network, sales app IO, and that's on 10.10.20. So that's where it's going through the physical network virtualization gateway to the virtual virtual machines up in the Hyper-V virtualized network, and then it's being live migrated over. And even though it's going from two physical servers that are on a 172.16.10 network to a 17.2.16.20 network, I'm still able to maintain that connection. And as you can see, I'm only getting a little brown out as it pops over to the other network. So those are the networks 1 and 2, and we really appreciated all the time it took for people like Prabhu and our network teams and everything to help us get this set up and configured and looking nice for everybody.
And so we have a sample of this tool similar. It's not as this tool was very focused on this demo, but we actually have a tool. Effectively, what this tool is utilizing is a bunch of PowerShell to pull all that customer address, provider address in. So we have a sample of this tool, which we'll put up on our site, which I think a blog is going to come out this afternoon on, and up on the MMS demo site. And you can just grab that, run that in your network virtualization environment, and it shows you just basically your VMMs of their customer provider addresses moving from site to site. And effectively, how many virtual networks you got, it will just suck that straight into the tool as well. So, and then we'll work on getting the more graphical one there. All right, let's talk about my demo 3, my dev eye for the IT guy. We've been trying to really work on how we increase the communication paths between developer and operations. And we always use the word DevOps, and I feel that sometimes we throw away, you know, sort of that word. And it is developer operations, you know, this whole concept of that in the past, you know, I remember when I worked in IT, I would argue with my devs all the time. They would be always saying that it's my network issues that were causing latency, and I would be saying it's their SQL calls. And neither of us had that deep understanding of each other's environment. And I think one thing the System Center 2012 guys at System Center 2012 APM provides us is that deep understanding of exactly what's going on and how to basically do trace stacking and getting that information over. And so we did a couple of things here. Once we really wanted to announce that new release of System Center Advisor and its integration into Ops Manager as part of our Ops Manager tool. So that's really exciting, and I'll talk a little bit about that more in a sec. And then, of course, highlight Global Service Monitor if you hadn't seen that as well, which I think is one of the really great services residing on Azure, especially for web availability and .NET application availability as well. We want to show where we're improving operations developer communications by the use of the same tools. Now, Matt didn't show you sort of the other side, the Visual Studio side, but all the same aspects into app diagnostics, IntelliTracing is completely available for our developers. Just it takes that whole communication path and puts it into a whole new level. And then we want to really showcase simple 360 degrees application monitoring is, and we drop off the slide. I can't remember what it is. Application monitoring is cool.
That works.
So let's go, let's wander into the demo. Can I borrow the box?
Yeah, I don't know which number it's on.
That's all right. We wander into this one. Okay, so this is pretty much the environment Matt showed you. And one of the first integrations he showed you was the System Center Advisor integration. And effectively, this is going to come out in beta very shortly, and you'll be able to utilize this. You need to add some Operations Manager components onto your OM server, and also if you need some client components as well if you're running the Ops Manager client on whatever management environment you're running in, like a PC or something like that. But effectively, once you've set this up, it's going to go out and do that proactive analysis of your environment, depending on which servers you point it at. Now, the two exciting things about here is, you know, of course, Ops Manager, System Advisor, System Center Advisor isn't new. I mean, it's technology we've had for a while, and you've been able to get sort of the web version of this and view, you know, the web version, be able to host the agents on your servers and, you know, get the alerts, get information about that. And this is a predictive tool. I mean, this tool takes the thousands and thousands of cases and man hours that our support team has working with customers and partners like yourself, loads it into a database. So this is just not pulling things off TechNet. This is actually a very defined database which is looking for certain patterns. You know, if you have A, B, and C, you might experience this. You know, if you don't have this, you might find that you're experiencing this. And this information, you know, by making it an Azure-based service, we can update this incredibly frequently, push this information down to your ops environment. The good thing about this is that it's you can still utilize it in the System Center web console view and deploy the agents to your servers, but now with it's fully integrated into Ops Manager, it will just reuse the agents that you currently have within Ops Manager as well for the same System Center advisors. And you can see it's going to, you know, there's a bunch of stuff that it's pulling up here around consistency checks and trace flags where it's noticing information in our environment. So you can really go very deep into this information to understand exactly what's going on. And we have a bunch of product knowledge, much more advisor-type product knowledge. And since I'm not logged in, it's not giving me that information. But with the advisor stuff, as I said, it's, you'll be able to get your hands on this in beta in just a moment. So the other thing we wanted to focus on is global services monitoring. And GSM is great. It's a tool that's provided as an SA benefit of system service, so it's provided as a free resource as part of that. And it gets loaded. You know, there's a number of ways you can access it. One of the easiest ways, of course, in the administration component. This is really where I'm going to create my authoring packs. The other one, of course, is you can absolutely hit it under your authoring view as well, so you can see that it loads in as an authoring pack under my web application availability monitoring. So let me just walk you through. Matt walked you through a really simple sort of view of this. I'm going to walk you through the application availability test because it has two sort of flavors. It has the one that Matt showed where you're using the exactly same web test that your developers have been using to load test and performance test through the, you know, development and sandbox environments. And which is great, and but they're going to define all the parameters, you know, the wait times, they're going to define the outage times, the performance times, and that's how you load that in. Alternatively, you can actually do it yourself and actually define exactly some of the performance characteristics you're looking for. So in this case, we're just going to go out and put a name. Let's go call this a test. Define a management pack. Why don't we pick on Fourth Coffee? And at this stage, you can actually put any URL that you pretty much want in this. So, you know, depending on whether you know you where your application lives, internally, externally. If you want to monitor somebody else's application, you could quite happily do that as well. So, you know, to prove this point, we'll put in if I can type today. We can put in Microsoft.com and we can monitor the availability of Microsoft.com. Here's when I add my external locations, so I can go and filter those across those 16 points, Azure points of presence around the world. The big thing here is that what GSM does, it's really great, is it's outside in monitoring. Now you could do this with web, you could do parts of this with your web application transaction monitoring that you have an ops manager now, but that's inside out monitoring where I'm basically monitoring performance transactions of a web application, whether it lives internally in a hoster, in Azure, in a service provider, but I'm using my ops manager server to poll that information. That's how I sort of created the error in the demonstration I did. This is effectively taking that away and saying, you know what, I'm going to test it from where your customer is. You know, if your customer is sitting in Sydney, Australia, I can test the experience from Sydney, Australia and tell you exactly what that is. The other good thing is you can actually put internal locations in as well and use the same tool for internal locations. So for example, if I wanted to sort of add one of our operations manager servers here, I can quite happily do that. Once we've got that added, you can see that was we have a little bit of differences between the validation test that Matt showed. I can then go in and configure lots of other stuff associated with this. The test frequency, the minimum test frequency, of course, is 5 minutes. I can then determine from a performance point of view, you know, what do I want to say? What do I want the performance to be? So I can say, you know what, if the transaction response time for this website's more than half a second, I think that's an error, I want to know it. So you're going to basically define your SLAs. And you can see you can go in and really define a lot more associated with this. You can bring all this information back, you can look for certain body information, HTTP header information, you can define proxy servers, which is very good if you're trying to do this from internally in your organization. So there's some great things you can do in GSM. And GSM gives you two great views. It gives you effectively the active alerts view, which you know we've all seen before, but we have the sort of this two view. We have the test state view, so you can see here this is what just gives me that view of the test states. And I've got all the integration of Ops Manager that I can start, you know, like health monitoring and alert views, diagram views. And then of course I've got that one that Matt showed, which is the dashboard or the summary map as well. It takes usually 5 or 10 seconds to come up, but you can see that I closed it down before, but this is that GSM view, and this will, you know, update itself every 5 to 10 minutes.
And one of the good things here is that each site updates it from their site on their schedule, so that gives you, it may like pop up as green on one side, and then pop up as red on another, and then pop back up as red on the other one as they update and they come and send the data back into.
Yeah, exactly. All right, and so the last thing that Matt showed you, of course, was our APM integration. And we've done a bunch of great new things with SP1 APM integration as well. So you can do things like MVC pages now and SharePoint APM monitoring. So we've really tried to enhance some of the monitoring characteristics around Windows services that we didn't have in the initial 2012 release, and our tighter integration of the Avoco technology and seamless integration. But I think the biggest things have been around the developer side of the world. And you know what we're really trying to do is provide as much information to the developer as we can. And what Matt sort of showed you this assigned to engineering view here. What that does at that stage is I have in my monitoring tools, I actually have a TFS integration now. So what I can do, which I don't have on this machine, what I can do is I can integrate that TFS services into my operations manager environment. So what this allows me to do is it's effectively a polling solution. So my TFS environment and the Solution Explorer environment is fully integrated into my ops environment. So if I assign that to engineering, it actually appears as a bug in their work item queue. And then they have workflow where they can assign it as well. The great thing also is it takes the entire IntelliTrace stack and brings that over as well. So if I'm doing SQL parameters or things like that, you know, I can get a real sort of full core information associated with that. So here's, you know, a server view that we had before, where Matt showed you the client-based monitoring. You know, we can take the, you know, parameters and SQL stacks and all this type of stuff and just push all that information completely into from the IntelliTrace trace and push that information across. And this stuff goes incredibly deep. I mean, there's some amazing, there's absolutely some amazing things you can get out of this. But that's, again, we really wanted to show you how easy it was to set all this stuff up, you know, in your organization and be able to sort of do proactive monitoring of these custom applications and also do proactive monitoring from a customer point of view around a GSM environment.
And this, by the way, is our developer that has no graphical sense whatsoever. That
yeah, that was
about.
My coffee mug in the web page. So, you know, it took me hours to do as well. All with MS Paint. Anyway. All right, so if we move back to the slide deck, let's talk about Demo 4. Now, Demo 4 was all about Orchestrator and automation. I mean, automation is just becoming so prevalent in our IT organizations because we want these systems to react to, you know, changes of business demand and changes of business state, where we may want to be part of the process, or we may not want to be part of the process. So, for example, if I want to simply scale an application into one or two Azure instances, absolutely, you know, do that automatically. I can cover that. But if I want to, say, fail a site over, which you know you can do with Hyper-V Replica and Orchestrator, I probably want to hit that button myself. I probably don't want that to be completely automated because at 3 a.m, we could have a little network outage for a few minutes and my entire site decides to wander over to the other side of the world. And the great thing about this workflow process is it gives me that ability. What we didn't show you is the deep service manager integration in that. We basically showed you Orchestrator effectively providing that sort of workflow process, but a lot of the stuff is going to use Service Manager to provide that incident reporting, change requests, and tracking, and allow you to really sort of integrate a functional workflow model into your environments.
And one of the things we also wanted to show there was that your applications may not just reside on any one particular cloud. They may not all be on premises, they may not all be in Windows Azure, and if I have something that's split across those different premises, how do I instill the right kind of knowledge to be able to hook me over to the right cloud at the right time? So what we're going to do and talk about in this type of demo is as the information for the alert comes in, not only does it come in, we do have a decision tree inside of that Orchestrator runbook that decides, do I scale this web tier or do I scale the underlying app tier that's running on premises? And because of that, we need to have that network connection between those two environments. So as Vijay showed in his demo with the networks, that we have the ability within Windows Azure to create a network connection between those virtual machines out there and our virtual machines local. Well, I can only run a multi-tier application that splits across those if I have that internal connection that's necessary. So Michael now is going to bring up, you ready to bring up the demo?
Sure.
Yes, so we're going to bring up the demo now and show you some of the pieces of that.
So what you basically saw is we basically have an application that's running. So our front end of our application is running out on Azure as a cloud application. I can show you that in Azure. You can see here that we have a bunch of instances that is running effectively that front end web tier. And basically what we do is we use a tool that we commonly refer to internally as Chaos Monkey, which basically allows us to break things. So this is just, you know, and effectively when we want to break something in a demo, this is the tool that we use to do it.
It's predictable then, we know exactly when
it's going to happen. Yeah, so we know exactly what's going to happen. So you can see all I'm really doing here is I'm loading up a delay of 10 seconds in this website. You can see that even though the frame loads, the access to the actual core
the pictures
content
in the database
takes 10 seconds. And now what I've got is a web application transaction monitoring and GSM, which is actually looking for that component, and then it's going to throw an alert. And that's exactly what you saw. You can see here's my delay of 10-second response time, and it's throwing that alert. And you can see here that I should have a new resolution or a new alert state. So that's effectively how we kicked off the demo. Now, if we look at a runbook point of view, the great thing here is that, you know, we had a runbook associated here that allows us to sort of scale this tier, understand capacity. What I've built for you as a handout, which we're going to load up later today, is actually a more extensive version of this. And we actually utilize a great VMM private cloud tool, which will go in and really look at the core capacity of your private cloud. and make a determination of a true or false. Do I go to my private cloud tier or do I go to my web tier based on that? Now, of course, if you're in a multi-tiered environment, you've got to think about load balances and all that type of stuff. But if you take that one step back, this runbook is, you know, gives you that great sample on doing that capacity analysis. And then it's utilizing pretty much libraries of runbooks on how to increase instances in Azure or how to increase instances in Virtual Machine Manager. And I, you know, as I said, we'll post that online and I have a great, you know, a great
description on
Word document on how to sort of walk through this, how to change the PowerShell scripts. We've done a lot of work to sort of get through that.
And one of the things you're going to notice on here is that we get the alert from Operations Manager and we kick off the resolution and we inform Service Manager. But you could obviously do it the other way
you
too.
You could do it the other way around.
Our Operations Manager feeds into Service Manager then when
and the reason the we runbook. Don't do that in a demo is because Service Manager has, you know, the sort of 60 seconds. You know, we can dial it down to about 60 seconds, but you know, depending where you are in that timing, you might be sitting and twiddling your thumbs for 55 seconds while you're waiting for Service Manager to pick up an incident.
And then and send it over to Operations
and send it
Manager.
Over that. But it's a fully reliable environment, as Kenan was saying. So normally this is a long-running workbook. So we've set this workbook up to pretty much poll the alert manager every 10 seconds. So we didn't want that in the demonstration. That's why if you're really quick, you probably saw me hit the run button when I wandered into this, which is a rarity when I'm doing this demo because I always forget the run button. So effectively, once it's done that, if we go out to Orchestrator, again, I'll show you, sort of, I'm going to go a little bit deeper into this. And renew our instances. What I love about the Orchestrator web console, it's a lottery. It's like a, we don't know how long it's going to take to refresh. It's a good one. So we go and have a look at this. And again, we'll actually walk through the instances. So this is what you didn't see, right? You didn't see that. Here's it's running that first thing. So it's in that timing zone saying, you know what, I'm going to go poll the alert information and then I'm going to see this runbook run. So I'm going to get the web application. So I'm looking for a specific alert, whether it's a web tier alert or an application alert, meeting a different need. I'm going to set my acknowledgement, so I'm going to acknowledge that alert, so I'm not going to run a second runbook for that same alert. And now I'm going to do the check. Oh, I'm running the wrong runbook. But see, it's working a treat. And it's going to hit that VM environment in that sense. And it's going to walk through each of these Azure clouds and update the increment. Because I ran the wrong runbook, it's not going to do the Azure environment for me. So let's just go back and
stop that one first.
Stop that one and rerun it, hey? All right, to make things a little easier.
We got to set that back to new.
Yep, you can see it's been set to acknowledge, so we don't rerun the runbook. We'll set it back to new, and we'll go back to our runbook. And let's run the real one in here. Okay.
And the other thing is, if he ran it before and Azure hadn't finished deploying that virtual machine, and then he runs it again, what happens is that they collide at the deploying instances, and so that's why it hits the red and then goes down. And that's the thing, you want to build an error checking into your Orchestrator runbook so that if something like this happens, you don't blow up Azure and deploy too many instances.
And you can see that. We have a number of error checkers. And this is a real runbook. We use this runbook to configure Azure capacity in our lab. So we've got a lot of error checking here based on increment updates and things such as that moving through each of these areas, depending what Azure is doing at the time. And the good thing is that this is a continuously running runbook. So if it's going to pause at one area, we've got ability to wait times and stuff like that. So you can see it's going through each of these components. It ran that PowerShell script. And that PowerShell script is effective. If you know too much about Azure, you know you can go in and slide the instance bar around the cloud. Effectively underneath that is a configuration file. And we're using that PowerShell script to effectively update that configuration file. So what you're seeing here is my Azure environment is in transition. And then I can look at what instances that Azure environment is transitioning. So you can see that it's going to add one further instance, which is going to pop up over here in the next few minutes. So that just shows you how you can just use this sort of runbook environment to do that. And if I go back to my Orchestrator view here, one thing that, as we said before, what you'll notice is it's running multiple versions of this runbook now. Now you would use, in this case, that's because we're we've got this runbook to kick off every 10 seconds, basically. In the real world, you'd use Service Manager behind this, and Service Manager would be looking for that incident report, which would be that alert in Operations Manager, and it would kick off the runbook through a change request, right? And that would solve, you know, then you wouldn't have to use it. But if you want fast and dirty for a keynote, this is the way to do it.
So this is the first 40 minutes, the first 40 demos. So now what we're going to do is we're going to pass it over to Adam.
All right.
And let them go the last two.
Can you get them to? Oh, here we go. All right. So Martin's just bringing up all of the virtual machines. So we moved from the data center side across to the people-centric side. And when you look at the people-centric side of what we do, we bring in Configuration Manager, Windows Intune, and then the end user experiences around Windows Server. So on our team, we're actually split. Martin's on the Config Intune side, and I'm on the Windows Server side. So we wanted to do a demo from both sides, and we wanted it to really be focused around what you can go be doing today. And so we looked at, from a BYOD point of view, how do we solve for this problem? And we have Intune, which is doing the cloud-based management of all of the mobile devices that are out there. And then we have Configuration Manager, which a lot of you are running today. And so we really wanted to show how easy it was to do that. I skipped over going through the wizard only because, quite frankly, it's a boring wizard to go through and there's a lot of clicks. And for you guys in the audience, watching me go through a wizard is not particularly exciting. And so we skipped that one so that you didn't have to sit through a minute of me doing a wizard. After that, it was really doing all the live showing of what the Configuration Manager environment looked like. Now, the main points here are that you've got mobile devices coming in, you've got all these different devices that you need to deal with, and we've got a solution for how you can take control of this. We have the company portal, we have Intune, which can do all the management across all those devices, and you have Configuration Manager. And across all of those, you can become or take control of that, empower your users, yet retain control. You can see all the details that are up there and in the blog post that's going out. I think it may well have gone live at 12 o'clock, if not very shortly. Has all the links to all of the details about how to get started and how you can be doing that now. So I'm going to hand over to Martin, who's going to actually take you through. Yep. If we can cut over to the demo environment, Martin's going to take you through what we actually built and how it works.
Okay, so if I can get the screen switched over to this demo PC.
There we go.
This is my demo laptop that's sitting behind the scenes. It's another Lenovo 530. One of the key things I wanted to point out was we're running the Demo 5 and Demo 6 off a single laptop. So if I pull up my Hyper-V manager, you can see the virtual machines that we have running on that one laptop. So it's a 32 gig laptop with two SSD drives in it, so it's a fairly beefy machine, but we're not talking about masses and masses of infrastructure to support these scenarios. So for Demo 5, I've got two virtual machines that I use for that environment. We have our primary, which is my single box Configuration Manager environment. And then I've got a server here which is running DirSync. I would have had this all on one server if I could do it, but unfortunately the DirSync process can't be on your domain controller, so it does require me to stick an extra box in there, but it's not actually doing much other than synchronizing up to the Windows Azure AD from my main AD. One other thing I wanted to point out is we are running dynamic memory with our virtual machines here, and you can see they're not actually sucking up that much memory. So these kind of scenarios are actually fairly lightweight when you want to play with them, put them in proof of concept, test and see what things do. So let me go into my Configuration Manager server. I'll bring it up full screen. Adam took you through kind of the environment around configuring the Windows Intune subscription. We set up a Windows Intune account. I ought to mention that we used a Windows Intune trial account for this. You can go to windowsintune.com and sign up for your own trial account and quite happily connect it up to Configuration Manager. For the other side of it, I did actually use the Configuration Manager SP1 eval VHDs for my one box environment. So you can go and download those from Microsoft.com and get your on-premise test environment to go and play with and hook it up to your Windows Intune trial account. No cost associated with that, very simple and easy, straightforward to do. So Adam showed you earlier the Windows Intune subscription properties. We went through and configured this very basically for our all users collection, but normally you would target that down to a collection for your users that you want to limit for device management. And then we configured the platforms that we want to support. The main configuration that we do here is around the certificates that are required. So for Windows RT and Windows Phone 8, we do use code signing certificates for the applications that we're going to sideload to the devices. So I did have to load those into the console here. Once the wizard had been completed and all the platforms had been set up, the only other thing I needed to do was deploy the connector role. So Adam showed you earlier the manage.microsoft.com Windows Intune entry appearing configuration manager. And on my main configuration manager server, you can see we've deployed the Windows Intune connector. Let me just zoom into that. It's worth pointing out this Windows Intune connector is a very lightweight role. You just need to deploy it on an SP1 server that is able to get out to the internet with HTTPS. So you might want to offload it onto a dedicated box or an internet-facing box rather than have it on your existing on-premise configuration manager distribution points or something. But you could, if you wanted to, just stick it on an existing server that's already there. So that was the configuration of the subscription and how we hooked up to the cloud management service. Pretty straightforward to do, really, as Adam was saying earlier. Then we've got our devices. If I go into my All Systems collection here, you can see the devices. We just enrolled a number of devices that we had in the office to provide some data in there. So we've got a selection of devices just to show that this is a real environment and we are looking at real device management here. And similarly, with the software library. A number of applications, both things like the insurance calculator, which was our line of business app, the Apex file that we've actually uploaded into the environment, and a couple of other things like our BI dashboard. Again, just sample demo applications that we've got within Microsoft, uploaded them to be sideloaded to the devices. And then you can see a number of other apps like the Link app, which are deep linked from the store, or something like Skype. If I go and pull up that one, you can see the links through to the public stores for that application. So again, I just went through and created a number of applications, both the line of business and the deep linked apps there. So we had a good amount of data to show you on that. I'm not actually going to show you the device side of things, because that was fairly simple and straightforward. The devices were just connected to a Wi-Fi access point that had an internet connection, and they were talking directly to the Windows Intune service. There was no communication between my configuration manager environment and the devices themselves. Configuration manager was talking to Intune. The devices were talking to Intune to get their list of applications and things. So that was kind of the configuration manager environment. As I said, very simple and easy to set up the subscription. I built it all on the eval and the trial environment, so pretty straightforward there.
Yeah, it definitely was a design point that we wanted to build this out in a way that you guys would do it as well. And so we deliberately built on eval Windows, eval config, and used an eval for Intune as well. So there's nothing permanent in this demo. We're not going to keep this environment. It's going to die in a number of days. It was built just to do this, but we just populated it with data and showed that you can do this in your own environment pretty quickly, really. Mm-hmm. All right, can we go back to the slides, please? Okay. Demo 6. So Demo 6 was about protecting information. And while Brad sort of cut away and talked about data and said, well, it's great that we can manage apps, but what about the data? We've got to make sure we can protect that. And so this demo was all about Server 2012 and Dynamic Access Control and Rights Management. And so all of this was released with Windows Server 2012 back in September when we GA'd Windows Server 2012. And to be honest, probably got a little bit lost in amongst all of the other capabilities of 2012 around storage, network, vert, and heavy compute, which is fair enough. But now that you guys have got through that and we started to do it, it's about, well, how do we manage this data? And if we're letting our users use all of these different devices, what happens when you take that data away from its source repository? Or inversely, what happens when these devices come into your environment? And so we wanted to show you that it is possible to protect your corporate data, especially sensitive data, in a very machine-learned kind of way, not relying on users to do it. And so what we configured was Dynamic Access Control. It was looking for keywords, which Martin will show you how we actually configured that. We did a very basic scenario where we just went, are you domain joined or not? And we had Windows 8 Enterprise and Windows Server 2012. And the check that we were doing was purely at the device level, that where we interrogated the device. As it hit our file server, the Dynamic Access Control kicked in and said, are you a member of the domain or not? If you're not, then it punted Brad and said no. As soon as you went to the VDI image, which was domain joined, it said yes. There are a number of parameters which you'll see and Martin's going to show you that you can configure. This is a Windows Server 2012 and Windows 8 experience. It does not work on Windows 7 and below. Okay, and it does not work on Windows Server 2008 and below. It requires both Server 2012 and Windows 8. And really, this is about protecting the data no matter where it lives, and hence we got Brad to take the document onto a key fob, put it down. You could put it in email, you could send it anywhere. We had Rights Manage configured that said, if you take that document outside of the environment, you have to authenticate back. So can we cut over to the demo? And Martin's going to take you through what Demo 6 looked like.
Okay. And again, looking in the Hyper-V Manager, we can see here we've got four virtual machines that we were using for this demo, for Demo 6. We have our file server, server 1. We have our domain controller, it's fairly self-explanatory. We have our corporate client. This was the image that we used as the target for the VDI session. We then have a BYOD machine in here. This was actually just a standby machine that we created just in case there was some reason we couldn't use the surfaces for the demos. We were going to have a client that you could actually go to that was not an enterprise managed client that would behave similar to what we saw with the surface. So
we came very close to needing to use this morning. if the internet hadn't come back up, none of these devices would have worked. So it was going to be virtual.
So looking on our domain controller, Adam showed you where the policy was for the dynamic access control earlier. I'll just show you through here where we go with the AD Administrative Center, and we'll pull that up. If I look under the policies that we have here, we can see we've got our file server policy. We've got the setting here that contains PII. If I just drill into that, we can see the rights down the bottom here associated with that. If I go and click in on Edit here, we can see the permissions as you would for normal user and group permissions. But if I go and click on Edit on the PII approved, this is where we come up with the dialogue that you saw earlier around the parameters for the device that's connecting. So the device-based claim that's saying, hey, is this a Windows 8 Enterprise machine or Windows Server 2012? If it's not, we're not going to allow access. But if it is, we're going to let it through. And we can see, if I just drop back there, there's a number of other things we can configure here around kind of parameters for user resources, devices, and the equalities associated with that. So very simple and straightforward to set up, not just the user-based control, but also what we can do interrogating the device itself. So let me drop out of those and switch over to server one. So this was our file server. If I go pull up the start menu here and pull up file server.
File server resource manager?
That's the one. File server resource manager. This is where we did the IRM tagging and management of that. So if I go into classification management here, and we look under classification rules, we've got this rule in here, the confidential classifier. If I just pull up the properties on that, we've got our scope that we've set. And this box doesn't have Zoomit on it.
Sorry, it doesn't.
The scope that we're setting here is just the file share that we have. So it's on the C drive of the server, and we're just going to look at the files that the user actually pulls up. And then we've got the ability to go in and configure what kind of classification we want to specify. So here we're going to say that the classification property we're going to address is PII, and we're going to set it to high if our rules are met. If I pull up the configure here, we can see the rules that you can put in, and there's a number of ways you can configure this. To keep the demo simple and straightforward and easy for Brad to do, we just looked at for the string performance in there. But you could look at doing a number of things there to tag your documents, whether it's based on code words or certain phrases that you want that we can look for in the document there.
There's a hands-on lab, and I'm running several ILLs on exactly this, and you can step through and recreate the credit card scan, and it shows you how to build the regular expression that looks for credit card numbers.
Yep. So very simply, when a file gets written to the file share, it's checked and then classified according to those parameters. If I pull up the IRM version of the file here and look in the properties, we've got the classification properties here. You can see the personally identifiable tag here was set to high. So that's what actually tagged the file as containing the PII there. If I switch back to my file server resource manager and look under file management tasks, we've got a task here, apply RMS policy for PII. So this is a task that's going to run and look at the files and determine, OK, if there's any files with the PII set to high, we're going to apply the RMS policy to it. So if I pull that up, we can see we've got the same kind of scope settings here around the share that we're going to look at. We've got the action here that we're going to take. So there's a number of things you can do around kind of expiring the files. But here we've chosen to do the RMS encryption and set it to be confidential FTE only. We have the ability to run notifications, so if you want alerts to happen that somebody's uploaded this file to this share and it contains these code words in it, then send an email to their boss telling them they're going to be fired. We can also pull back reporting as well, so if you actually want to track and log these things, we can pull that back there. Here's where we set the condition for the task, so looking for that PII flag and the value high that was in there. And again, there's another number of options you can set against that. And then finally, the schedule. When do we actually want this to happen? Do we want it to run all the time or just to happen on a particular scheduled basis? For this one, for the demo, we had it running continuously on new files. So as soon as a file was saved and written to the environment, the task was going to run against that file, see that the PII tag was set to high, and apply the RMS policy to that file. There we go.
All right. So can we just go back to the slides just to close out, please? Is that the slide? Yes, it is. All right. So those were the keynote demos that we did. There are sessions on all of these. There is a blog post going out that has links to the files that Kenan and Michael talked to you about downloading. For the demos 5 and 6, we've got links to all the getting started guides that we use to build this environment. So everything that we built for 5 and 6 is based on the TechNet guidelines and labs, the hands-on labs that you guys can go and do, and the breakout sessions that we're going to have as well to go through all of this in detail. So we've given you a view of all of that. We wanted you to see that A, it was all real, B, you can go be doing this today, and C, give you all the resources to go do it your place. So thank you for coming to the keynote. Thank you for coming to here. Hope you have a great week. And if you want to catch us, we'll be around all week. So thank you and have fun. Eh?